Seatbelts on. Let's get ready. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So this is really very interesting. A rabbi wrote an open letter to Senator Ted Cruz saying, don't include me in your Judeo-Christian values talk. Drop the Jewish part. I responded to that earlier in the week with a letter. And then on the radio, we'll have the radio part excerpted for you on YouTube in the next few days. But in the meantime, an Orthodox rabbi has written back saying, Senator Cruz, you're on the right side and we're with you. So rabbi against rabbi here. Now, of course, within the Jewish community, you're going to have different perspectives, just like in the Christian community, you'll have different perspectives. But I'm going to read that second letter from the rabbi because it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I'm going to read that for you today on the air. The number to call with any Jewish-related question or comment of any kind, 866-348-7884. What does that include? A Hebrew question. What does that include? It includes Israel-related question, Old Testament-specific related question, Judaism question, questions about Jewish objections to Jesus. We'll cover them all today right here on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I wrote an article earlier in the week on gullibility, the great sin of the charismatic church, and I wrote it as a charismatic. Now, I knew that I'd come under some attack for writing it as a charismatic, being a charismatic, no problem. Those folks in their sincerity are going to attack me anyway. But in the midst of it, I sent it to a colleague who's a strong charismatic critic, but who honors me as a fellow believer in the Lord and someone seeking to be a person of integrity, just as I honor him in the midst of our differences. It's not John MacArthur, by the way. I gladly interact, but I don't have an open door to do that. But this is another charismatic critic. And he said, look at this latest fundraising ploy being used by Pastor Rod Parsley. I understand, I just found out today that he's recovering from cancer. May God's healing and strength be with him. May he have a 100% recovery. But I informed his ministry. When I got this, I was shocked because he was using this fundraising ploy for this year. I don't like the whole style of it. Anyway, plenty of ministries do. I just don't like the whole style of it. But the Hebrew letter Yud, which is spelled Yud Vav Dalet, and the numerical value of that is 20. Yud is 10, Vav is 6, Dalet is 4. So 20 is the numerical value. Well, somehow he left off the last letter, the Dalet, the D. He left off the last letter, and he just went with Yod and Vav. It would be like calling him Pastor Roe and leaving the D off. And in any case, he he has this whole fundraising thing that Yod stands for connectivity, and you could argue that it's related to hand, but anyway, it stands for connectivity, and this is the year of connectivity, so your gift with, $1,016 or whatever with 16 is, you're going to bring in, God's going to bless you as you give that. Now, by all means, if you believe in a ministry, support it, give to it. But I wrote to the ministry and said, hey, before I correct this publicly, I wanted you to have the opportunity to fix it privately. You left the last letter out. You had to spell Yud Vav Dalet. You left the last letter out, so it's not 16, it's 20. Well, they wrote back thanking me and respectfully saying, but they have other scholars and rabbis who interpret this differently. Hey, there's nothing to interpret. There's nothing to interpret. Here, spell my name. Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. There's no X in there, is there? There's no Q in there, is there? There's no Z in there. It's not a matter of interpretation. Yod is Yod Vav Dalet. You don't leave the duh off. You have yo instead. Yo. Yo. Oh, please, Lord, help us step higher, especially in the charismatic church.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, some interaction between radio host Stephen Malzberg and David Duke. David Duke, the well-known white supremacist, former Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, who had basically endorsed Donald Trump. And, of course, Donald Trump got controversy for not openly denouncing him on Sunday TV last week, etc. We won't revisit that. Most of you are familiar with it. But it gets pretty heated between Malzberg and Duke. And what's of interest to me, and look, Malzberg's doing his best to get his point across. And David Duke raises a fair point. Why do you keep talking about my past? Why do you keep talking about my past when Van Jones, who's a former communist activist, is a respected guy on CNN now, why don't you talk about his past? Or Robert Byrd, who used to be Ku Klux Klan, why don't you talk about his past? Well, the difference is pretty simple. The difference is that David Duke still puts forward anti-Jewish, or at the very least, but anti-Zionist, I'd say anti-Jewish material, and is in many ways still a white supremacist. So let's grab some of these clips here, and then I want you to hear David Duke on Press TV. This is Iranian-sponsored English-language TV. So let's start with clip number 3, Stephen Malzberg and David Duke. And Stephen Malzberg, radio TV host, interviewing David Duke. Clip number 3.
The Klan is irrelevant. I'm not in the Klan. Do you understand that?
But you were in the Klan. You were the Grand Wizard of the Klan,
so
were you not?
What?
All right. So here's the point. And obviously Malzberg is an experienced host, and he's pushing to, on the one hand, get his point across and get Duke to answer. On the other hand, he wants to let David Duke speak, and David Duke is a forceful guy himself, all right? I would have done something slightly differently. I would have said, so do you renounce what the Klan stands for? Okay, you're no longer in the Klan. We understand. Do you renounce the values of the Klan? Forget lynching people. Do you renounce the values of the Klan? That's what I would have asked. I mean, Malzberg's asking it now in specific ways. So go to number 4 as they continue.
Let me ask you. Do you still have a problem with Jews?
I have a problem with Zionism.
Do you have a problem with blacks?
No, I actually, listen, I don't consider myself at all anti-Jewish.
Okay. I've watched enough of David Duke to say, in my book, he's anti-Jewish. It doesn't mean that he doesn't like some individual Jews. Okay? It doesn't mean that. What it means is that he is so strongly anti-Zionist and so strongly believing in all kinds of Jewish conspiracies that listen to what he has to say on Press TV, clip number 6.
Zionism is not simply like the Jewish state in Israel, Netanyahu and a few of these other radicals in Israel fomenting these policies and a few other Jewish groups around the world supporting them. This is a worldwide, Zionism is a worldwide phenomenon. It is a globalist phenomenon. They dominate the international banks with enormous financial power. They dominate the world's media, and they dominate the political structure.
All right. So the typical Jewish conspiracy thing, yeah, there are influential Jews. For our numbers, we're influential. But we're hardly controlling the world and controlling the world's media and controlling the world's finances and this conspiracy to take over and destroy the evil, evil Jews. There are people who are not anti-Semites who are anti-Zionist, but in many, many cases, anti-Zionism is just the new term for anti-Semitism or the new target of anti-Semitism. So one more clip from David Duke, clip number 7. Again, as he's an expert commentator for Press TV. Again, Iranian-run English TV, Press TV. Clip number 7.
The Palestinian problem and the Zionist problem goes far beyond the relationship between Israel and the Palestinians, Israel and Lebanon, Israel and Syria, Israel and Iran. It is a worldwide problem. And their control of the media and the control of the political process around the world, they are behind what we call globalism, which is really an effort toward world government, toward a Jewish extremist messianic vision of the world. I mean, it's talking about world domination, and they really do dominate the world in many ways, in media, in international banking, and in politics.
Mr. Duke, that's why we still associate you with the Ku Klux Klan, because you still hold these kinds of views that are typical of Klan's views. That's why we still associate you with the Ku Klux Klan. If you changed your tune, then that would be a regrettable part of your past, but completely forgiven and not held against you. But you still hold to these values. You still hold to these things. And I can tell you this, as a Jew from birth, even though I am a follower of Jesus and not welcomed in certain parts of my Jewish community as a follower of Jesus, I can tell you this, I spent a whole lot of time with Jewish people over the years, over the decades, from rabbis to business people to the most secular people you can imagine to people in the arts and entertainment, you name it. I've never yet met a Jewish person, had a private or public conversation with that person, and their goal was taking over the world. Never met one. Never met one where it was a thought that entered their mind. Well, I guess it's because I don't know the Rothschilds and the Illuminati. Yeah, that must be it. Sarcasm fully intended. 866-348-7884. Louis Farrakhan is now praising Donald Trump. So you have neo-Nazis praising Donald Trump. You have far-right Holocaust-denying French politicians praising Donald Trump. You have David Duke praising Donald Trump. You have Louis Farrakhan praising Donald Trump. Louis Farrakhan for Trump allegedly not being willing to receive money from Jewish donors. Yeah, that's the Farrakhan angle. 866-348-7884. Do I think Donald Trump's an anti-Semite? No, of course not. Thought never entered my mind. But I'm just telling you what's out there. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Colts Neck, New Jersey. Mike, boy, Colts Neck, didn't we just talk a couple days ago?
Yes, sir.
All right, somehow you got past our screeners and our no calls within 2 weeks at the same time, but that's all right. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, sir. Thank you for your show. The KKK was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. They're a domestic terrorist group. I had a funny thought. That maybe if they expanded their hatred list to include Presbyterians and conservative evangelicals, maybe America might wake up.
Yeah, I think America's pretty alert to this. But anyway, hey, just do us a favor though, and when you do call, if you're asked about when you called previously, the more accurate time frame, the better. Okay, what was your scriptural question, sir?
My scriptural question was, how do Jewish rabbis answer Jeremiah 31:31?
God making a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. They would say that something's still to come. They would say that the new covenant will not change the content of the Torah. Rather, God will put his Torah into their hearts and their minds. So in this particular case, that they would say that what it will mean is that when God makes this new covenant at some future time, they'd look at a passage like Deuteronomy 30 as reflective of that, where God would circumcise the hearts of Israel, and that from there on, they would all universally obey the Torah. God would forgive all their sins, and now all the laws and traditions would be written on the hearts of all the people, and they would serve him in perfect obedience thereafter in kind of a messianic era. And on the one hand, that's a fair reading of the text to an extent. The problem is, in context, it's really something that was expected to be inaugurated while the Second Temple was standing. We have to say, well, how did that happen? Well, we have an answer. We have the first fruits of that through Jesus, the Messiah, coming into the world and providing us with radical change of heart and life. But we know there's more to come for the complete fulfillment of that. Thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown, your Thoroughly Jewish host. Hey, just got further word, Pastor Rod Parsley, whose Hebrew fundraising campaign I mentioned had a serious error in it, is getting back to strength. He is cancer-free, but is getting back to strength. So I'm glad to hear that, despite this issue on the fundraising point. Just wanted to mention that. 866-348-7884. We've got a great video. We've got a great new video that we posted, not our own, but a great video that we posted about the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, Sanction of Israel movement, which in many ways hurts the Palestinians more than hurts Israel. And it reveals the biases of those involved with the movement, their inequities, their unjust comparisons, their standing on the wrong side of social issues in so, so many ways. But there's a great video that we posted basically saying if you want to join the BDS movement, you have to shoot the Bible. You can watch that by going to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown. If you haven't liked it, we're almost 350,000 strong on the Facebook page, and it's very, very active and very, very lively. Like that page today, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. All right, before I go back to the phones, within a week, the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference begins in Bethlehem. And I'm all for Christians hearing from Palestinian Christians and finding out about their struggles. I am not all for a conference that in many ways will completely avoid the elephant in the room, which is radical Islam, which will blame the Israelis unfairly for Palestinian suffering, that will fail to recognize the reason the Christian population is in decline in places like Bethlehem and throughout the Middle East is because of Islam, not because of Israelis, and that will seek to cultivate an attitude that is hostile to the modern state of Israel. And you'll go there and you'll see the checkpoints that the Palestinians have to go through to get in and out of their cities and towns into Israel proper. You'll see the wall. About 3% of the security barrier is wall and 97% is fence. You'll see that. You'll see how inconvenient it is. You'll see how ugly it is. You see how it divides families, etc. Without getting the full recognition, if this conference is anything like the conferences in the past, without getting the full recognition of the fact that, wait a second, that wall was put up there to keep snipers out, the fence the rest of the way to keep murderers out. If the Palestinians were not inciting hatred towards Israel day and night, you would not have the fence there, you would not have the wall there, you would not have any of that barrier there, you wouldn't need it. If Hamas in Gaza was not dead set on the destruction of Israel, you wouldn't need Israel taking its drastic measures against Hamas. And if the Palestinian Authority, through their TV and media, was not so constantly inciting anger and hatred towards Israel and blaming the Jews for all their problems, you would not need the security barrier. And the checkpoints would be a thing of the past. Look, I go in and out of Canada once or twice a year ministering, and I've been there where we've had to wait an hour to get past a checkpoint, sometimes longer, to get past customs in and out of the border. And it's come the wrong time of the day. You can wait for long periods of time. It's an inconvenience, but you understand Canadian security, American security. Sometimes ministering in a city like Juarez, Mexico, you fly into El Paso and then drive down into Mexico. We've been held up long periods of time at border control there, in and out. So you understand that these things are often needed. But within Israel proper, in the Palestinian areas of Israel, you wouldn't need the barriers, you wouldn't need the checkpoints if the Palestinians put down their desire to destroy Israel. Look, to repeat this, we've said it over and over again. Out of the roughly 800,000 Palestinians living in Israel when the nation was birthed, the Israelis said, stay. The Palestinian leaders said, get out of here. We're going to destroy the Jews, drive them into the sea, and then you go back to your homes. Well, that's not what happened. So about 600,000 fled from war. And yes, there was war, and there was an Israeli aggression against Palestinians in some areas. There was war going on. Yes, correct, it happened. But about 200,000 stayed. Those 200,000 are now more than 1.5 million. Why? Because they're not trying to kill the other Israelis. And they're thriving. And they have all kinds of rights that their neighbors don't have. The Arabs, the Palestinians living in Israel, have abundantly more rights and freedoms than the Palestinians living under the Palestinian Authority and or the Hamas leadership. One of the organizers for Christ at the Checkpoint a couple of years ago asked me, or one of the organizers or leading participants asked me if I would be willing to speak at one if I was invited. Some of my Messianic Jewish friends have spoken at these in the past, but the overwhelming weight of those presenting is going to be very hostile to a pro-Israel position, very biased against it, scripturally, theologically, experientially, etc. So I was asked, would I bring a message on the suffering of the Jewish people at the hands of the professing church through the ages? And I thought this was a great idea. In other words, let the Palestinians realize there that the Jewish people through history have not been the powerful aggressors. They have not been the giant Goliaths intimidating the little Davids. Of course, David takes them down. They have not been the Hitlers. They have been the ones that Hitler put in the gas chambers. And before that, through church persecution through the centuries, the Jews suffered greatly, different times in history, often in history under Christian leadership, professing Christian leadership. And to this day, you've got what, 6 million Jews surrounded by how many hundreds of millions of Arabs and Muslim nations in the immediate region around them? And the land of Israel is about 1/650th of the surrounding Muslim and Palestinian territories? I should say Muslim and Arab nations. So I thought it was a great idea, but that's not the main thing I wanted to speak on. I said, I speak on that as long as you give me a session where I can speak on radical Islam, the elephant in the room. Radical Islam, the elephant in the room. And never heard back. That was the end of that. That was the end of that. Does that tell you something? I think so. I think so loud and clear. All right, friends, I've got 90 minutes more to take your calls, to interact with you. If you can't listen on radio, continue to listen online at Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check out our latest videos, latest articles. This is the week to become a torchbearer. This is the week to become a torchbearer. As a new monthly supporter, we're sending you a resource package worth $50 with a beautiful Bible as well. Go to my website right now, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Join our support team, and together we are making a difference.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. This is Michael Brown. Thrilled to be with you on the air today. 866-348-7884. Let us go right to the phones as we continue our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. In Brooklyn, Dan, welcome to the line of fire.
Hi, Dr. Mike. I am so grateful to be able to talk with you. You're a great leader, and I really appreciate the work you do for us.
Thank you.
I have a Jewish question. I'm going to change it from the Jewish question I actually told your screener I was going to ask, because I remembered a more important one.
Sure.
There's a movie out in 2014 called Patterns of Evidence by Tim Mahoney, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an excellent documentary verifying the historicity of the Book of Exodus, the history of the Book of Exodus. And in the documentary, and of course you know, and even in today, there are a lot of scholars, especially Jewish, because some Jewish scholars, who deny the historicity of the Exodus story. And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about that and explain why that is and what we can do, and, you know, how that affects the message of the gospel.
Yeah, sure thing. The question is, if an event as large as the Exodus from Egypt, an event which is of such massive proportion in biblical history, an event to which all the later authors point back, if, in fact, that never happened, it was just a myth, then you have to think, well, everything that comes after it is a myth as well. How can we know that any of it is true? So there's been a lot of discussion, both on a purely academic level, okay, what can we learn archaeologically, historically about the Exodus from Egypt? And then from a theological point of view, there's been a lot of investigation, okay, what is the Bible reliable here or not? So this has been discussed by scholars, especially since the rise of the modern archaeological movement, especially in the late 1800s and up until today. So the normal chronology put the Exodus around 1446 BC. Somewhere around there, it was based on Solomon building the temple 480 years after the children of Israel came out of Egypt. So 966 plus 480 gave you 1446. And there were scholars who held to that for a period of time. And then others said, no, there's no real evidence of a conquest of Canaan or anything like that at that time. You know, we don't see any evidence as we look through the various strata of the archaeological digs. We don't see that. And we think the Exodus probably happened maybe 200 years later. And then the other problem is, well, is this affirmed in Egyptian texts? Well, the Egyptian texts did not really talk about defeats, only victories. This would not be the kind of thing that the Egyptian historians would want to talk about. But is there evidence of some type of calamity or something that fits? And then others saying, well, you've got to point back to the time of the Hyksos dynasty, and that's an earlier time period, not the later time period. And then the conquest of Jericho, there were debates. You know, that would be the first major city that went down under Joshua. And you had John Garstang, an earlier British archaeologist, with his view, followed by Dame Kathleen Kenyon and her view, and just kind of endless dispute. And some scholars saying there is support for a conquest of Canaan, but it's later. Others saying there is support for great upheaval in Egypt, but it's earlier. So Patterns of Evidence is fascinating. I was asked about this, I think, within a week or so. And I did watch the entire DVD with real interest. And it is fascinating. I mean, you have some Egyptologists who are not quite mainstream in their interpretation of things. And when they give the evidence and talk about it, it looks like, wow, you do have exact evidence of Joseph? And wow, is there clear evidence of upheaval at this time? So I really, really like what's presented and how it's presented. When you come to the end, though, I was waiting for the punchline, and the punchline was, okay, if we make the shift, it leads to other problems. So in short, Dan, we're still looking for more evidence to see exactly where the biblical accounts date. But it could well be that there'll be stunning confirmation of something that others have denied. The jury's still out in that regard.
God of life. Yeah.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That Middle Eastern music reminds you it is Thursday. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. 866-348-7884. Let us go back to the phones with your Jewish questions. Mount Vernon, New York. Elizabeth, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. God bless you. My question is, when and where was Jesus circumcised?
Well, he would have been circumcised on the eighth day, but where? We don't know.
Oh, so I thought it had to be by a priest, so I was thinking it would have been in Bethlehem.
No, it doesn't have to be by a priest.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There, yes. Yeah, so, did not have to be by a priest, and you know, to this day, the person that would do it is just someone trained to do it. Obviously, it didn't have to be done in the temple, of course.
I did not know that. I thought it had to be in a temple and by a priest.
Yeah, if it was in the temple, it would have been Jerusalem. You'd be thinking of a synagogue in Bethlehem. But no, so we don't know where he was circumcised. Just we know that he would have been at the age of eight, and that this was something that basically every Jewish village where children were born, you'd have to be able to, you know, accommodate it not far from there, because obviously you couldn't go on a, it'd have to be as soon as you couldn't take a baby on a 3-week journey within 8 days, right?
I was thinking of that.
Right. Nor could you, you know, expose a little one to all kinds of travel and hardship. So this was just something that would have been fairly readily available in
Is
that day.
Is it possible his father did it?
I've never asked that question. And what I'm going to do is, as soon as I have a break, I'm going to actually check just on circumcision. Hey, look, I'm being totally honest with you. The information is probably readily available, but I just never asked it. So I'm going to tell you I'm not sure as to that possibility, and I'm going to check during a break and talk about it when I get a chance, all right?
All right. May I say one more thing also? Are you aware that Gordon Robertson, Pat Robinson's son, is doing a documentary? It ends today on the 700 Club, of whose land is it, Palestine or Israel? I would like to eventually know your opinion on that documentary. It goes for 3 days, and today is Wednesday, is the last day. Well, today's Thursday. So it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's called Whose Land Is It?
Yeah, I wasn't aware, but I could almost guarantee you that I'd be in agreement with them, because they've historically been very strongly pro-Israel and very fair in their reporting on that.
I don't know. I'm a lay person, so I would like your opinion, someone expert in that field.
Got it. If we are able to watch it, we will we will absolutely get you information. All right. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
All right. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Percy and... We won't go to Percy. Ruth in Fairfax, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
I don't know why there's so much discussion on different races and different color people and white people and all. You know, I praise the Lord how I was raised. We were extremely wealthy family in Georgetown, and where we lived, there wasn't any playmates except around the block. They were the little black children, and I used to go ride my tricycle and bring them into my front yard, and they were my best friends. And my father was Italian. He used to bring poor people that were on the street and welcome them in and would feed them in our kitchen. Now, my grandmother was prejudiced, and she would get mad. She lived with us. But I was raised with my father loved Jesus and my mother loved Jesus. And so everybody. God loved everyone the same. I ended up in show business, and, you know, some of my best friends were Jewish and so, before I was saved, and some of my best friends were black. I mean, I didn't even look at faces. Why can't we be like that in America? If we're born again and Jesus is in our heart, and Jesus was Jewish, how could anyone
Ruth,
have put
yeah,
down
of course,
Jewish
that's
person?
That's the way it. That's the way it should be, but a lot of it has to do with our upbringing. If we were raised in a segregated upbringing, if we were raised in a small-minded, bigoted upbringing, if we were raised in an upbringing where the outsider was always hostile and the enemy, and sometimes that is the case, you're in a dangerous area, but if we were raised in a bad environment, sometimes it takes a while to overcome these wrong attitudes. If you're raised in the right environment, then, yeah, it's just natural. We're one race, we're one people. And just like you have men and women and you have dark skin and light skinned and other things and you have different ethnicities and background, but we're just, and everybody's kind of the same, but everybody's different. Yeah, that's the way it should be. And certainly as followers of Jesus, certainly.
Well, that's what I mean. When I hear all of this with the Republicans, now I would never vote for someone that believes in abortion. But, I mean, the way they put down Trump, that's disgraceful. How will he ever surrender his life totally to Jesus?
Well, okay, that's right. That's where I differ with you. I don't like the ugliness of the campaign, but without a question, Trump started that. There's no question whatsoever.
But he's not saved.
But he claims to be. But hang on, he claims to be. He claims to be a good Christian, a strong Christian. His words, reads the Bible more than anybody.
I know, but he doesn't understand.
Right. We agree. We fully agree. Okay, yeah. But here's the point. Right now, Marco Rubio is not thinking, how can I lead Donald Trump to Jesus? And Ted Cruz is not thinking that. And Ben Carson has not been thinking that. What especially Cruz and Rubio are thinking, how can we stop him from being the Republican nominee, which would be a disaster for the country?
We can lead him to Jesus. Look at the Good Samaritan.
Ruth, I agree that should be the ultimate goal of everyone. But right now, Donald Trump is surrounded by Christian leaders like Jerry Falwell Jr. and Robert Jeffress. Okay, and they, some of them have spoken the gospel to him. Some of them strangely and bizarrely claim that he's a good Christian. But please understand this. Donald Trump thinks that he has great support from evangelicals, and a lot are voting for him. So he thinks he is a favorite of the Christians, and he's got Christian leaders standing there. Look, I know one that met with him privately and presented the gospel to him, and it was all new. From what I was told, it was news. He had never heard any of this, even though he's got all these others around him. There are plenty of people who have the opportunity to speak the gospel, and I heard from at least one of these Christian leaders who's endorsed him. They have amazing opportunities to speak into his life. So let's pray they're able to reach him. I don't think, though, the campaigning, I don't like all the negative campaigning. Donald Trump, unfortunately, started it with his vulgarities and his attacks and his insults, and I don't think he's going to stop anytime soon, unfortunately. And that's also inflaming hostilities around the world. There are nations that we should be working with and finding ways to work together with that are getting upset with the United States just because of his rhetoric already, and he's not even the Republican candidate yet. So those are the bigger concerns that I have. But, and look, I'm going to warn against him as much as I have opportunity and feel burdened to until it's too late to warn so that we can do our best to get in a solid conservative candidate, a pro-life, pro-family candidate whose convictions we know and who has a track record. So I'll continue to do that. But in doing so, I'll do it in a Christian way. As much as possible, as much as it lies within me. And if I make a mistake, I'll fix it. Anyway, thank you, Ruth, for the call. I do appreciate it. And let's reinforce what you were saying. Yes, we are one family. We are one family. 866-34-TRUTH. I was just sent a clip from palwatch.org, Palestinian Media Watch. And, boy, it's the sentiments that are shared by many Palestinians, little kids from watching cartoons stuff and play characters and earliest news reports inundated with Jew hatred. And that's why as young as 13 years old, they're going just to stab Jews even if they die. After school, let me just go and stab a Jew. They're so inflamed with hatred based on propaganda. And here, this more anti-Jewish, anti-Israel propaganda among the Palestinians on palwatch.org. And basically, there's a saying, a Palestinian saying, if a Jew fights in the water, if a fish fights in the water, it's the Jew's fault. Trying to catch a fish, the fish is fighting, or two fish fighting with each other, it's the Jews' fault. Boy, oh boy. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the Line of Fire. 866-348-7884 on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So the question about when was Jesus circumcised? Of course, Yeshua, as a Jewish boy, would have been circumcised on the eighth day. Where? We don't know, but he was born in Bethlehem. It would have been somewhere there. And by whom? We don't know. Could it have been the father? Well, just looking at an article on JewishVirtualLibrary.org, Rabbinic Attitudes and Halachic, that's legal ruling, halachic legislation. According to rabbinic legislation, it is a Jewish father's duty to have his son circumcised. Now, the source there is Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya 260. Shulchan Aruch is compiled about 1,500 years after the time of Jesus, but it reflects Jewish tradition and custom. Should he neglect to do so, it devolved on the court, the Beit Din. It is not a sacrament, and any child born of a Jewish mother is a Jew, whether circumcised or not. Although circumcision may be performed by any Jew, in the first instance, it is desirable that the operator, called a mohel, be a loyal adherent to the tenets of Judaism. Again, this is all later Jewish law. We don't know what existed in Jesus' day. But who would have done the circumcising? Would it have been the father? Would it have been, would every father know how to do that? Would it have been the local person in the community, excuse me, who was experienced in doing it? I simply don't know what existed in first century Jewish tradition. I know it's existed over the century since, especially more recent centuries in terms of laws, etc. So if I find out more, I will certainly let you know. 866-348-7884. I started a poll just an hour ago, maybe. I started a poll on Twitter. I just was curious to see, and again, on Twitter, we only have about 20,000 followers, just under that, 19,800. And if I do a poll, I normally get 400-something responses, 400 or 500. I've gotten as many as 1,000-something responses. So again, this is just a little glimpse of an audience that's a subsection of another and another. So it's just for my curiosity and to get feedback and to see where the people that are following me on Twitter, where they land on different things. But the question is, the existence of the modern state of Israel, this is the poll statement, the existence of the modern state of Israel is a direct fulfillment of biblical prophecy. True, false, not sure. Now, maybe I'll do that poll in the second hour. Maybe I'll do it on the air. The existence of the modern state of Israel is a direct fulfillment of biblical prophecy. True, false, not sure. Not sure was 24%, which was interesting. I didn't know it'd be that high. I thought it would be more black or white, yes or no. False, thankfully, was only 13%. True, 63%. Now, I wonder if Twitter existed or if we had the ability to do a similar poll. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the existence of the modern state of Israel's direct fulfillment of biblical prophecy. I wonder what the numbers would have been. My impression is they would have been overwhelmingly higher, saying true, 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 true. You see, here's what happened historically. When the Jewish people were scattered around the world, when the church began to get political prominence during the times of Constantine in the 4th century, as the church now began to build large buildings and structures and have power it didn't have before, surely the triumph of Christianity represented the truth of the gospel and displayed and demonstrated the truth of the gospel, while the suffering of the Jews, still languishing, still exiles, still without a temple in Jerusalem, scattered among the nations, this demonstrated, according to some theologians, the rejection by God of the Jewish people. Well, why didn't he just destroy them? No, their role was to be a witness nation, testifying to their lostness and thereby testifying to the truth of the gospel. This is a theology that some held through church history. Some even felt to the extent the Jewish people suffer, to the extent you aid the Jewish people in their suffering, in other words, help them to suffer more, you were doing God's work. Some actually believed that kind of nonsense. Well, the problem is, as the Jewish people didn't go away, and the Jewish people were then not only kept by God, but miraculously brought back to the land, there is no other logical way for me to understand this other than God did it. Why? Because when God blesses, no one can curse. When he curses, no one can bless. When he opens a door, no one can shut it. When he shuts a door, no one can open it. When he scatters, no one can regather. When he gathers, no one can scatter. So if he scattered the Jewish people in anger and judgment, who regathered them? Who regathered them? Had to be God. There's no other logical explanation. And even from a purely historical point of view, there's really no other logical explanation for how we were preserved and then ultimately regathered, maintained our identity. I mean, no other people has done this. And it's not to our credit, it's to God's credit. When I say our, I'm speaking as a Jew, Jewish follower of Jesus. So when the Jewish people were regathered to the land, especially after the Holocaust, and so many theologians repudiating their replacement theology, their supersessionism, their idea that the church was the new Israel, had replaced Israel in God's plans of salvation, God's plan of salvation. So Six-Day War, 1967, Jerusalem back in Jewish hands, it seemed miraculous. So a lot of theologies really took a big hit. The theologies that said God's finished with Israel, God's through with Israel, and here's Israel. And here's Israel back in the land. And here's Israel surviving attack back in the land. And here's Israel in possession of Jerusalem again. Suddenly people began to look at Scripture and say, whoa, wow, look at this. God is not finished with Israel. Well, as time's gone on, not as many dead Jews as in the Holocaust, not as much world sympathy. Sorry for my crassness, but that's the reality. Now, injustices towards the Palestinians, or alleged injustices towards the Palestinians, and certainly there are some. And now Israel's been there long enough. Well, there's nothing significant prophetically. It's just statecraft, and that was the West interfering in the Middle East and creating all these nations, and there's nothing to it. And we're going to be anti-Israel again because they're not living up to their own ethics and so on and so forth. And there you go. There you go. The church finds a way, even with Israel supernaturally restored, to deny God's purposes for Israel. Bad news is the church in some parts of the world and in America increasingly is getting things wrong on Israel. The good news is many are getting it right. And more importantly, God himself is backing Israel. Visit the website, AskDrBrown.org. Be sure you connect with us, Facebook, Twitter, email. My bottom line today, the whole world can turn against Israel. I guarantee you this, God himself will fight for his people. Seatbelts on. Let's get ready. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to speak with you today. If you have a Jewish-related question, comment, related to the Hebrew language, related to the people of Israel, related to Judaism, related to the Middle East, related to the Old Testament in particular, or Jewish objections to Jesus, or anything like that, phone lines are open, 866-348-7884. I want to read something to you. This was an article from the Jewish Press. This is an Orthodox Jewish publication. And it is from Rabbi Elchanan Pupko, called "Dear Ted Cruz, Moral Clarity Matters, and You Are on the Right Side of It." Dear Senator Cruz, and backdrop, a conservative rabbi, meaning more liberal in his beliefs, conservative does not mean moral political conservatism, a conservative rabbi in Denver wrote a very strong letter against Ted Cruz a few days back, saying, "Drop this Judeo-Christian value stuff and leave Israel out of your agenda, and leave my people out of your agenda." Well, Cruz has the support of many Jewish leaders, many rabbis. I wrote a strong response to the rabbi and also address things on the air, and we'll take that radio broadcast where I address the rabbi and put that up on YouTube as well within the next few days. But more significant than my response, because after all, I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus, and most of the Jewish community is not going to listen to me as much for that reason, and some won't listen to me at all for that reason. So here's an Orthodox rabbi. "Dear Senator Cruz, in 1943, my great-grandfather stood with another 400 rabbis and clergymen at the gates of the White House, begging to meet with President Roosevelt, and the president refused. They were there to ask him to help European Jewry at the most difficult time of all and to see what can be done to save European Jewry during the Holocaust. Upon the advice of his close advisors, Roosevelt refused to see them. Roosevelt was told that those rabbis were Orthodox, just like I am, who are primitive and belong to the past, and that he should therefore not bother seeing them." These are all words and quotes. "Orthodox, primitive, belong to the past. Today, the Rabbi's March of 1943 is seen as a historical example of a sliver of moral clarity and light in the midst of the moral darkness of the Holocaust. The lesson this carries for me, his great-grandson, is twofold. One is that we should never remain silent, no matter how small we are, and two is that moral clarity matters. Senator, I have seen you attacked by some of my own fellow Jews whom I love and cherish, and I'm nothing but sad when I see those attacks. I see you standing up time and again for what is right, for religious values and religious minorities, standing up against tyranny and totalitarianism, fighting the multi-tentacled Iranian octopus of terror, and fighting for Israel's right to exist. When I see this, I am filled by nothing other than pride and admiration. Admiration to the moral compass that guides you in this direction and your willingness to take the stand for what is right, even when it might not be a popular position. Recently, your detractors have criticized your use of the term Judeo-Christian values. I asked those critics, if you are so devoted to the Jewish people in Judaism, where were you this summer when a deal that endangers the very existence of the Jewish people obviously was signed? I know where Ted was. Ted was fighting for Israel. Where were you when Israel was attacked in the summer of 2014 and the Obama administration used the FAA to put a siege on Israel? I know where Ted was. Ted was fighting for the only Jewish state. Where were you when three Jewish teens were kidnapped? I know where Ted was. Ted was on the Senate floor fighting for their return. What has come to be known as the Judeo-Christian ethic is the shared belief in the need for a more moral and ethical society. It was the belief that America could and should be a moral exemplar to the world. It was the belief that family and community are the foundation of a healthy society and that we should do our best to protect that. Sadly, some of those who believe in moral relativism find this hard to believe. Does this mean we'll all agree on matters of theology at all times? Probably not. But it does mean that this world is a better place when we work together than when we give up and hope. Any hope and do not try. A little bit more on this letter.
Fire we want, for fire we please. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Before I go to your Jewish-related calls at 866-348-7884, let me finish reading this letter, this open letter from Rabbi Elchanan Pupko, an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, on behalf of Senator Ted Cruz. And finally, Israel, he writes, after 2,000 years of traveling and wandering, Jews have found a homeland in the state of Israel. Anyone familiar with the history of modern Zionism in the state of Israel is well aware of the fact that some of Israel's best friends and allies, including Winston Churchill and Harry Truman, supported the establishment of the Jewish state because of those Jewish Christian values that you stand for, or Judeo-Christian values. It is therefore no surprise that you are such a friend of Israel. It is no surprise that you are so dedicated to the well-being of America's closest ally in the region. Time and again, I see you stand up for Israel and wish that members of the current administration be inspired by your moral clarity. Sadly, more often than not, this does not end up happening. Senator, may God bless you with many more years of continued success, health, and happiness. May you continue to stand by what is right and shine the light of moral clarity at times when it is most needed. Thank you, Rabbi Pupko, for doing that. As an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, I don't believe he'll be particularly impressed by my thank you as a Jewish believer of Jesus, but I want to express that in any way. 866-348-7884. We go to Charlotte. Ken, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, hello, Doc. Two questions. One, that ongoing thing about Jesus' name, Hail Zeus, and the name of the Father is supposed to be Yahuwah, according to the ancient Hebrew. And what do you know of the Odiyot?
Odiyot? Okay. Odiyot just means letters, so I'm not sure what you mean about that.
Oh, there's a whole series of the ancient symbols, which were pictographic.
Got it. Okay. So, yeah, just to answer in reverse order. The ancient Hebrew alphabet is borrowed from the Phoenicians, and it originally was a pictograph. So the same with our alphabet. Our alphabet, the English alphabet that we use, or the Roman alphabet, was borrowed from the Greek alphabet, and the Greeks borrowed it from the Phoenicians. So the English alphabet, the alphabet that's used, you know, in German alphabet, French alphabet, all that same alphabet, Latin alphabet, that goes back to the Greek alphabet, and the Greek alphabet goes back to the Phoenician alphabet. So they all went back to something that, before it was an alphabet, was based on pictograms, all right? But to be a pictographic script, you need hundreds and hundreds or thousands of characters, okay, to represent all the different shapes, sizes, forms of things. So what happened was that once an alphabet was developed, the pictographic meaning no longer applied. It had no meaning whatsoever, no significance whatsoever. So the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet is Aleph. So if we go Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, those are the first four letters. If you go to Greek, it's Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta. If you go to English, it's A, B, C, D, very similar. The only exception there being the C sound. So Hebrew, Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet. And then Greek, Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta. Then English, A, B, C, D, etc. All right. If you look at our English letter A, a capital A, If you round off the top a little bit, okay, so it's not like an upside-down V, make it more like an upside-down U, and take that line that goes across and pull it out a little bit on either side, what does it look like? It looks like an ox head, okay? So if you just make an upside-down U, okay, and then take the A part of it, the line that goes across it, and extend it outside, you see it looks a little bit like a head with horns. That's what the original Aleph look like, Aleph having to do with ox. And then if you look at a B, a capital B, that's an enclosed thing, right? You got the line with the two loops, but it's closed in. That goes back to original image of a house, by it. That's what the B stands for house. But once it became an alphabet, the pictograph meaning no longer exists. That's long since been lost. So what does A mean in English? It means A. Can be pronounced ah or a. Something like that. What is B? B. Does it mean house? No. Does it have anything to do with house? No. It means B. The same thing with the ancient Hebrew alphabet. This mechanical translation and some other things online is completely bogus. There is absolutely nothing to it whatsoever. To go back and to say, okay, well, originally it was an aleph, so that meant an ox head, and we're going to look at each word. Okay, and a bait, that's a house. No, absolute, complete nonsense. These are letters, not pictographs.
What do you think of this one fella from Jersey? I won't give his name, of course. But he says God, the father's name should be pronounced Yahuwah, and God is from Gadriel from the book of Enoch, meaning the devil, you know, the evil one. That was the Satan's name.
And, yeah, that's the kind
Yahuwah,
of stuff.
Yahuwah.
Yeah, Yahuwah. Okay, that's the kind of stuff that is worthy of the trash can. Worthy of the trash can. The only reason anyone even talks about it is because of massive internet ignorance. There is.
Do you have anything that you've ever posted on this?
Yes, of course. If you go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and yep. Where it says search, first search for Yahweh, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Y-A-H-W-E-H, where I discuss briefly the pronunciation of the divine name and explain why Yahweh is the most likely and Jehovah is certainly not it. And then Yahuwah, again, non-existent. And then you mentioned at the beginning the whole question, the name Jesus, Jesus in Greek. It was Yeshua in Hebrew, Jesus in Greek. That actually comes from Zeus. That is absolute nonsense. As one fellow once said, Jesus is no more related to Zeus than Moses is related to mice. It's complete fantasy. Sources people use are erroneous. Now, there is a Jewish teacher, Nehemiah Gordon, who's got some good scholarship behind him, and he argues that the divine name was pronounced Yehovah, and that Jehovah is correct in English, but it's really Yehovah in Hebrew. And he's got some good scholarship behind him, but the arguments ultimately break down. He's not one of these guys who's got these theories, I say, worthy of the trash can. So on an academic level, I reject the idea that Yehovah was the divine name and rather argue for Yahweh being the best and most likely pronunciation. But we don't know with absolute certainty. For sure, yeah, Yeshua would have been the pronunciation of Jesus' name, and then in Greek, Jesus. So to pronounce it Jesus in English is perfectly appropriate.
It seems to be that second to last letter, Vav, they pronounce it Wa, the ancient Hebrew, and that seems to be the major contention about this. But I appreciate your answering that. And
No, there's no contention that the original Vav sound is a Wa sound, okay? We know that it comes into English as V, but the original sound would have been a W sound.
Uh-huh.
You
yep.
still have it in Arabic. The original, for example, well, it's going to be too technical for me to get into this, but we know in certain words, like the Hebrew word yeled, which is child, we know the original root of that, or yalad, to give birth. We know that was originally, that Y was a W there, okay? And that's one thing. And then just the letter that's Vav, which is a V sound, as I say in English, goes back to a W sound in Hebrew. So there's not really dispute about that part. It's just the larger question of the pronunciation of the name. All right, Ken, thank you for your question. Hey, listen, I spent some time replying to Rabbi Solomon Grunewald, who wrote a very strong letter against Senator Cruz and against his use of the term Judeo-Christian values. I put out a written response to the rabbi, but now we have a lengthy audio response. It's 18 minutes. You can listen to it. We posted it on our YouTube channel. So, and we've posted it on Facebook. You say, I didn't know that. I guess you're not on our Facebook page. So listen, if you're on Facebook, join our almost 350,000 Facebook fans. Very active. We're posting there literally day and night, edifying quotes, links to articles, links to latest videos. Listen, the moment we post a video and it goes live, boom, you're going to know about it on Facebook. All right, that's Ask Dr. Brown, ASKDR Brown on Facebook. On Twitter, Dr. Dr. Michael L. Brown. Make sure you got two L's in the middle there. Dr. Michael L. Brown on Twitter to connect with me there. And we're going to post this on Twitter momentarily. So you can check out my candid response to Rabbi Grunewald. We sent Rabbi Grunewald my open letter, my response to him. And he wrote back very graciously saying, good, I want to stimulate discussion. That's why I did what I did. Very gracious response from the rabbi, which I appreciate. So check that out. Don't do it now because you're listening to the show. But after the show, check it out. Tell your friends. I think it's important to get these things out.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Thanks, Paul Wilbur, for introducing us with music. 866-348-7884. I'm going to go back to the phones momentarily, but let's do a little poll, all right? Let's do a little poll, and tell you what, we'll bring you on the air to give you a response. Do you believe that Israel today is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy, or do you believe it's like any other state, any other nation, be it Russia, be it Mozambique, be it the United States, be it Canada, be it Saudi Arabia, just another nation, that it's not a fulfillment of prophecy? Do you believe that Israel today is a direct fulfillment of prophecy, that God regathered the Jewish people back to the land as he promised he would do in the Bible? You might say, no-brainer. Of course, everybody knows that. In which case, your answer would be yes. Or do you not see prophetic significance in the regathering? You say, well, it's obvious it's not. All right. What do you think? 866-348-7884. I am not going to challenge your views. I'm not going to force you to prove them. If I think your logic is faulty, I may ask for clarification. We're not going to challenge you. Do you believe that Israel today is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy? Yes? No. Let us go back to the phones. Des Moines, Iowa. Shane, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Just answering your question. Yes, it's absolutely okay. A fulfillment of prophecy, but that's not my question.
All right, thank you.
I have two quick questions that have to do with giving and Israel. I believe firmly in supporting Israel and the Jewish people, and I wanted your recommendation for a ministry that I can get behind and support on a monthly basis that supports the Jewish people. That's my first question. My second question is, Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats, do the sheep refer to Israel, or who exactly are those sheep?
Yes, sir. All right, in answer to your first question, my own ministry, asked Dr. Brown, we're involved in Jewish outreach, but we are not involved directly in humanitarian aid to Israel and help like that. So I recommend that you hook up with Together for Israel, togetherforisrael.com. I can 100% vouch for them because one of my closest friends in the world, Scott Volk, birthed that ministry, and he lives to give ministry, to give funds to those in need in Israel, be it underprivileged children that need help in their school system, be it Messianic Jewish believers under persecution or opposition because of their faith, be it those that are standing strong for the gospel in the midst of difficulty, be it Israelis in serious need, togetherforisrael.com. Scott's hosted the show for me on Thursdays. He is a dear friend for over 20 years and a fellow Jewish believer in Jesus, and he lives to generate funds to support Israel. So togetherforisrael.com is the place to go. Tell Scott
okay, thank
I sent you.
You.
Yes, sir. As for sheep and goats, Matthew 25, verses 31 to 46, who are the least of my brothers that Jesus refers to when he says, I was sick and in prison and hungry, and you visited me and you cared for me and you fed me. When did we ever do this for you, Lord? When you did it to one of the least of my brothers, you did it for me. You didn't care for me. When didn't we care for you, Lord? When you didn't do it to one of the least of these my brothers. So the nations, notice it's nations that are being spoken of, interestingly. The nations that did this to the least of his brothers did it to Jesus in that respect. And they are called the sheep and go into eternal life. And the others that didn't do it are called the goats, and they go into eternal punishment. So many, many theological questions that come up there. But who are the least of his brothers? There are interpreters who believe it's the Jewish people. When I first heard that, I was a little skeptical, and I thought, are you trying to read something into the text? But there are other scholars, not just pro-Zionist scholars, but other scholars who believe that this is referring to the Jewish people, again, Jesus the Jew speaking, and that it has to do with Jewish suffering around the world, and who are those aiding the Jewish people in their times of persecution, suffering, and pain. Those are the ones doing it, as it were, to Jesus. And those who are not helping and aiding them in their times of suffering and pain are the ones who, in a figure, are not doing it to Jesus. That is one interpretation, and I have quite a few of my colleagues hold to it. Another way of looking at it, Shane, is that he's just talking about his brothers in the faith spiritually, meaning any follower of his, any one of his disciples who would be looked at as a little one, who would be looked at as one of his brothers, and therefore it would be a matter of the church in the midst of persecution, in the midst of suffering. Now, some just make it generic. Hurting, suffering, needy people who cannot fight for themselves, you know, be it a starving child in your neighborhood, being it an oppressed people in another part of the country who are impoverished, are we helping them? If we neglect them, we're neglecting Jesus. Of course, does that mean we go to hell for it? That's why I said there are lots of questions. He's obviously making a large point, though. The purpose of the parable is not to teach detailed theology, but to get an overall point across the importance of caring for the poor and the needy and the outcast. But you have to look at it and come to your own conclusions. Is it the Jewish people? Is it persecuted followers of Jesus? Is it generic for the hurting and the poor? It's a matter of debate to this day.
Okay, well, I think I'm going to support Together for Israel and the Voice of the Martyrs both, so I'll cover both of those bases then.
Well, wonderful. Yeah, Voice of the Martyrs, of course, is 100% worthy in that regard, helping the suffering church and of course, Together for Israel to stand with the Jewish people. Good for you, and I trust God will bless you for sharing with those that really are in the front lines of real need. Amen. Thanks so much. God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Brandon. God bless you.
All right. So what do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Is Israel today, modern Israel, a fulfillment of prophecy? Again, for all of you who say, of course, everybody in the whole world knows that. Nobody would ever argue that. Well, there are people who question it. Some question it theologically. Some question it historically. Some question it exegetically. And we need to know what Scripture says on that. I have absolutely no question that Israel today is a fulfillment of prophecy. You may not. That's fine. But what's happening is that the older generation of evangelicals almost took this for granted. The modern generation is not taking it for granted. They have no memory of the Holocaust in terms of anything close to them. They see Israel's been here all along since they were born. Israel was here since I was born, 55, but there was that sense of wonder about it, that amazing and it's impossible and how did it happen? I still remember just growing up as a boy and Six-Day War, and I had one of my friends whose parents were Israeli, and they'd be listening to the radio in Hebrew and all tense and what was going on, and it was much more living in our memory now. People today take it for granted. Then it got on the bandwagon of Israel bashing. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the line of fire on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. What's your opinion? Israel today, do you understand scripture? Do you understand history? Israel today, fulfillment of prophecy? Yes or no? Israel today, fulfillment of prophecy or just the result of Western intervention in the Middle East and creating nations where there never were nations before, like Saudi Arabia, and then trying to reestablish ancient boundaries that were long since gone, like putting Israel back in the land or recognizing Israel in the land? 866-348-7884. What's your opinion? Is Israel today a fulfillment of prophecy, yes or no? Before I get into that subject more with you and give you updates on my Twitter poll and take your calls, at the Oscars, there was a swag bag that included a trip to Israel, an expensive special trip to Israel, part of what you would win. And Ken Loach is on BBC Radio, BBC 4, with Ritula Shah. This is February 25th. Loach is an English film and television director. And he's reacting to this trip to Israel that you get in the swag bag with your Oscar award. So listen to what Loach has to say about Israel. Clip number 10.
Israel has been oppressing the Palestinians for 70 years. They steal their land. They destroy their houses. They kill them with impunity. They break international law. They disregard United Nations resolutions. And they break the Geneva Conventions. They're constructing an apartheid state. And I think to have an all-expenses first-class travel paid in those circumstances is pretty disgusting.
You can object to Israel's occupation of the West Bank, to settlements that are defined as illegal under international law, but that's not the same as an apartheid state. That's a very serious and particular accusation to be leveled against
Absolutely,
Israel.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people are seeing it as an apartheid state now.
Yeah, they're seeing it as an apartheid state because of the media bombardment and the misreporting. Israel's not an apartheid state. Listen, Palestinians are absolutely welcome to live in Israel, and 1.5 million of them do. How many Jews live in Gaza? Zero. Zero. How many Jews did the Palestinian Authority want living in the West Bank? Zero. That's their desire. Let it be Judenrein, to use the German term for free of Jews. If you want to have an apartheid state, that's where it would be. Not even apartheid. Jews can't even be here. All the same talking points repeated over and over. They're stealing their land. They're stealing their land. Actually, some of the land was acquired in the midst of war, just like America. You want to give back everything that we fought for, gained in war? But putting that aside, Israel is giving back 90% of the territory that it did take in war. Oh, does that matter? And Israel is constantly looking for ways to live peacefully with their neighbors who want to murder them. They don't kill Palestinians with impunity. Everything, every death of a Palestinian is going to be investigated and looked at. And why are houses demolished? Houses of terrorist families are demolished, correct. If your son living at home was making bombs in your home, and now he blows himself up. Yes, your home where he was doing this with your knowledge and probably your support will be bulldozed. Correct. Now, you won't be bulldozed, but your home will be. That is an Israeli way of punishing the family for working with the terrorist who blew himself up and killed Jewish men, women, and children. Do you care about the Jewish men, women, and children, Mr. Loach? Do you care about all those being stabbed? Do you care about the mother who, in front of her children, mother of a bunch of little kids, is stabbed to death by a Palestinian teenager, enraged by Palestinian lies? Mr. Loach, do you care about that? Oh, sorry. I'm just one of those Zionists. I guess I can't address the issue. Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So, Palestinian TV, this is the TV the kids grow up watching. Here's a poem they learn: to war that will smash the oppressor and destroy the Zionist soul. And then here's an anti-Israel protester on Twitter. I like how the Oscars gift bag includes a trip to Israel. If you're famous enough, you too can visit a country that's committing genocide. What horrible rhetoric for a people against whom genocide has been committed over and over with an attempt to wipe them out. With a world that hates them, with hostile neighbors surrounding them, and with the Jewish people really offering benefits and peace to Palestinians that will not try to kill them, how dare people refer to Israel as guilty of genocide? So listen to what English film and television director Ken Loach says again on an interview on BBC Radio 4. He's being interviewed by Rutula Shah, sorry if I mispronounced her first name, February 25th, so just last week. Clip number 11.
If you feel so strongly, and this is your view, then why would you object to other people visiting Israel to see for themselves?
And will they begin to the West Bank? Will they go to Gaza and see the rubble? Will they see the schools that were bombed by Israel in 2014, will they see the hospitals that were targeted by Israel? Will they see the places where families were herded together and then executed? Will they hear about the people who were asked if they spoke Hebrew, and if they spoke Hebrew, but they were executed? I think what they'll see is not... they won't see the real face of Israel. That's the problem.
But many people would argue the real face of Israel is a democratic country that is defending itself against all kinds of attack and suspicion. No country is perfect. If you have a critique of a country, isn't it better to go and see it for yourself? Many of us travel to places where we don't agree with all the politics.
It's a democratic country that is breaking international law. And all the Palestinians ask for is observe the law. Give us the rule of law. And I think what makes Israel special is that it is supported by the US, it's supported by the UK. There are arms deals with Israel which support this breach of international law. And I think that's not acceptable. So what is civil society to do in the face of that when your politicians support illegality? And I think the answer is, and many people are now coming to the conclusion, that the only answer is a boycott of Israeli goods called for by Palestinians, and to support the boycott of academic and cultural institutions that are supported by the state, not individuals. This is not about a blacklist of individuals. This is a call for a boycott in the interest of the rule of law.
What an ugly, despicable statement. Yes, I say those words in measured tones. What an ugly and despicable statement. Will they go to Gaza and see the rubble? Will they see the schools that were bombed by Israel in 2014? Hamas launches hundreds, thousands of rockets into Israel to kill Israelis indiscriminately. Indiscriminately. If they kill children, women, men, all the same, they're rejoicing. They're hitting their targets. Who? Jews in the land. They are building terror tunnels to this moment. They were spending all this money building terror tunnels to come into Israel. One of them was going to come up near an Israeli school, elementary school, so that they could kidnap as many children as possible, kill others. They had all the paraphernalia to do it. They're spending international money that's being given to them at disproportionate rates compared to other refugees to build terror tunnels and to kill Israelis. Israel finally responds. Israel sends warning into areas, get out, we are going to bomb. They call the houses, they drop pamphlets, get out, we're going to bomb. We know that there are bombs in this hospital. that Hamas has taken over this hospital and they're using it as a terror center. We are telling you to get out. We are calling you and we are sending pamphlets. We're raining down pamphlets saying, get out. I have friends that fought in the midst of this conflict or whose kids fought in the midst of this conflict. And they told me about the security training, how they were told, okay, when you go into this situation, it's life and death. You may be killed, but you have to give extra care to make sure you don't kill a Palestinian civilian. And when we hear all the atrocities that most of the people killed were civilians, that's bogus. In fact, according to those who have examined casualties in recent wars, as far as civilian casualties versus combatant casualties, this was one of the lowest in recorded modern history in terms of the comparison of civilian casualties. Yes, it's a tragedy when a civilian dies. It's a tragedy. People are up in arms about one particular hospital or a school hit. Turns out it was hit by friendly fire. It was Hamas rockets that hit it. But of course, Israel gets blamed. And where Israel did make mistakes, it was with terrible regret and apology. You can't take it back. But look, to this day, why is there all the rubble there? You know how much money's come in? Because this is known, Mr. Lotz. This is known. This is not some secret. Come on, sir. Live in reality. This is known. The Palestinians, the Hamas specifically, they are using so much of the funding to rearm themselves and to build terror tunnels. They've had numerous casualties recently where terror tunnels have collapsed, killing the terrorist inside. And some wonder was the new Israeli technology to fight against them. They're back to their murderous ways. That's why schools are still in rubble. That's why hospitals are still in rubble. That's why the quality of life is so poor in Gaza, because of Hamas. As for families being herded together and executed, that's a lie. That's a lie. The Israelis did not herd families together and execute them. Sir, that is a lie. You're on national or international radio. You are a film and television director, and you're lying. Well, you say, I'm not lying. I heard it. Well, then you're terribly misinformed. You're repeating lies. You're repeating propaganda misinformation. Well, they hear about the people who were asked if they spoke Hebrew, and if they spoke Hebrew, they were executed. Hang on. Who's executing whom? Why would Israelis execute someone for speaking Hebrew? And you're telling me that Israelis were executing Palestinians because they spoke Hebrew? Come on. Talk about the rule of law. Find out what Hamas does to its own people. You want to see executions? You want to see murders in broad daylight? You want to see innocent people shot in the head? You want to see oppression? Look at what Hamas does to its own people. You want to see all-out war? You want to see torture, barbarity? Look at what Hamas and Palestinian Authority have done to each other over the recent decades. Look into these things. And tell you what, I imagine, based on what you're saying, that you're fairly liberal in your perspective, and in that regard would be pro-gay diversity and same-sex marriage and those kinds of things that I personally differ with you on. But try being an openly gay person in Gaza. Try being an openly gay person in the West Bank. Find out what would happen to you among your enlightened friends there, and then be openly gay in Israel and be celebrated for it. Again, I'm not commending Israel's values there. I'm simply saying that when you want a tolerant society, it's there. Tolerant in these contemporary liberal terms, it's there. Mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling stuff. Ugly and pathetic. That being said, I'm not surprised by it. I'm not surprised by it. 866-348-7884 is Israel Today, a fulfillment of prophecy. We go to Angela in Burlington, North Carolina. What's your take on this, Angela?
It's a very definite yes. And with regard to what you were saying about the Israelis executing people, I received a newsletter from an organization that I know to be reliable, and month after month after month, there are stories of people being brought over the borders into Israel to be treated in Israeli hospitals at no cost. Their families are brought with them. They are cared for while their loved one is in the hospital at no cost.
There are terrorists who try to kill Israelis and get shot, and then they're cared for in an Israeli hospital. There are children of terrorists who are cared for. There is Israeli aid trying to help suffering people in Gaza all the time. Absolutely. 100%. Thank you for both points. And see, here's the thing. If someone says, well, she's just pro-Israel because she believes in prophecy. No, she believes in justice, too. Thank you, Angela. Look, go to PALWatch.org. All right? Ken Loach, go to PALWatch.org. Palestinian Media Watch. PALWatch.org or Memory TV, MEMRITV.org. Go there, out of the horse's mouth.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, friends. If you live anywhere near, in North Carolina, anywhere in North Carolina, we want to urge Governor McCrory and the houses in North Carolina to hold a special session to overturn the aggressive bathroom bill that was passed in Charlotte, the LGBT activist bill that was passed in Charlotte last week, so what, 10 days ago now. It's very important. Governor McCrory said there would be an immediate response. Now they say, well, we're not going to hold a special session. And no, we want to urge them to do it. We want to urge them to do it and to not open a Pandora's box of problems in the city of Charlotte, problems that do not need to be here. So go to don'tdoitcharlotte.com. Don'tdoitcharlotte.com. And you will see a petition to sign. It'll just take you a second. Please do it. If you live anywhere in North Carolina, this is for the entire state now. If you live in North Carolina, please sign this petition for the mayor and for your state representatives. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's see. Let us go to Bill in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Brown. I have two ways to back up my statement. Yes, I have a resounding yes to that God, the same God that scattered the universe, can regather Israel. However, as to this earth, I believe that he can regather the older brother of Israel based upon the prophecy given by Isaac.
Who's the older brother of Israel?
The prophecy of Isaac to Esau was by faith given according to Hebrews.
Right. Oh, so you're saying Esau?
Yeah.
Where did God? Okay. So what's that have to do? We're not talking about can. We all understand can. It's not a matter of whether God can do it. God can do anything.
Right.
Is the modern state of Israel today a fulfillment of biblical prophecy? Has God regathered the Jewish people to the land in fulfillment of prophecy?
Has happened, is happening, but it is just not taking place on this little planet.
Well, okay, so hang on. This sounds like double talk to me. God promised a physical restoration of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, and there is a physical land of Israel that we're talking about. That's all I'm asking you. The physical land of Israel.
Yes.
Has, in your opinion, God regathered the Jewish people to the physical land of Israel in the Middle East today?
Yes, it's just that there's no limit to God as to just one literal Israel and one little literal land in an ever-expanding universe.
You're talking about like we're going to take over Mars or Pluto or another galaxy?
Oh, no. I'm talking about a God who scattered and can regather.
But he didn't scatter Jews off of the planet. He scattered them on the planet, sir. And he's regathering them on the planet That's all we're talking about.
My God is bigger than that.
All right, tell you what. I mean, this is going a little different direction. With all respect, I did ask a simple question. God's very big. God's very vast. And ultimately, what we care about is souls and spiritual harvest, etc. We've had enough conversations in the past, which is why I kind of said, all right, we got enough of our answer there. So over on Twitter, I asked my question. I made a statement, true or false, the existence of the modern state of Israel is a direct fulfillment of biblical prophecy. And, you know, it's just a couple hours and only a couple hundred votes so far, 223 votes so far. 63% said yes, so it's been pretty steady. 15%, a little higher, false than before, it was 10% before. 22% not sure. And again, this is just out of my Twitter followers, so almost 20,000 Twitter followers and a couple hundred who've responded to the poll so far. So that's all that indicates. But at least here's the positive. The positive is that almost two-thirds say, yes, that's true. The negative is that 37% either say no or they're not sure. That is seriously a point of concern. Why? Because it is one of the most visible, tangible, demonstrable acts of God in history over the centuries. Yes, there are human elements involved. No, the Jewish people have not been perfect. Yes, there are crimes that have been committed by the Jewish people and Israelis. No, not everything that happens is a miracle. That being said, the fact that God said he would scatter us among the nations and yet not destroy us, he's done that. And there's no other logical explanation for our continued existence beyond that. That he said he would regather us back to the land and the land would supernaturally prosper. It has happened. It has happened as he said. And once more, I've put this forth in debates. I've put this forth on social media. I've put this forth over the radio and have not yet heard a single rebuttal to it. If you believe that God scattered the Jewish people in his anger, then based on biblical truth, if he scatters, no one can regather. If he opens a door, no one can close it. If he closes a door, no one can open it. If he smites, no one can heal. If he heals, no one can smite. If he blesses, no one can curse. If he curses, no one can bless. So who regathered Israel if not for Almighty God who scattered Israel? You then have to say, well, he didn't scatter them. Then a whole lot goes in terms of judgment and things like that that Bible clearly speaks of. What's the percent of Jews in space? Do you mean in NASA astronauts? Is that what you mean? Just trying to figure out a comment that was just sent to me. But listen, friends, in all seriousness, the modern state of Israel, with its all imperfections and blemishes and with all its amazing qualities, is a direct fulfillment of prophecy. Jews in space, a Mel Brooks bit. Somehow I missed that skit, was not aware of it, maybe for good reason. Okay, step back and look at the scriptures again in their plain sense and look at what's happened. They were not fulfilled with the return from Babylon. They are being fulfilled in our day in front of our eyes and have been for decades. Let's step back and recognize what God is doing rather than diminish it and dispute it. Hey, friends, we have just posted some important new videos, new articles on the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Do you get my weekly emails? Sign up right now. Here, tell you what, if you're at a stoplight, you can do it for a second. Got a break in your work. The baby's not crying at home. Sign up now. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You'll see the little email icon. Sign on that. That way you'll be notified of key things and special resources, and we'll encourage you. Stay in touch that way. My bottom line today, Once more, I'll say it. The one who scattered the Jewish people is the one who has regathered.